Welcome to the Streak Easy, our brand new spin-off podcast of the Geek Easy podcast, where we talk about the very impressive streak of the phenom known as The Undertaker. I am Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
I'm Jaron McCaffrey.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm a huge taker mark, so I am so excited for this, guys. You have no idea.
I'm a little nervous sitting this close to you. You get pretty animated when you start talking about the taker.
This is going to be awesome. So, as you guys probably know, since we've injected a little bit more of this into the podcast recently, the three of us are big pro wrestling fans. This is one of the things that we do together all the time is watch the wrestling events, especially the big wrestling events.
And literally wrestle.
And we literally wrestle each other because all three of us, that's right, all three of us have been involved in the independent wrestling scene for, oh my God, so
18
long
years.
Now. 18 years now. So, I mean, pretty much I jumped into it right out of high school, and that's where I met these guys, and we've been best friends ever since. But now we're going to talk about guys beating each other up, so I'm real excited about it, because The Undertaker has got an impressive legacy, and a lot of people realize this that are wrestling fans, because he went 21 straight WrestleManias without losing a match. He's the only person in history to have that type of a streak when it comes to these big events like that. And especially there towards the end, or maybe not right at the end, but like a chunk towards the end, he became known as not only the guy who had this undefeated streak at Mania, but also the guy who always walked into his match at WrestleMania and had the best match on the card, like for a solid chunk of years there. It was really, really impressive stuff.
And those episodes are going to be fun.
And those are we've got a ways to go before
coming,
we get to
coming
those.
Soon before, to the Streak Easy. Good matches.
Yep, y'all. You got to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere. And boy, the stuff we're going to talk about today, let me tell you.
So before we get started, Danny, you're a stark raving mark for the taker.
Yes, I am straight up a taker mark. And if you are joining us and you're not really that big into wrestling and you're not quite up on the terminology, a mark is what is referred to as like the straight super fanboys, basically, of wrestling. They're referred to as marks. I am a straight fanboy for The Undertaker. Yep. Always have been.
Super fan.
He's the guy who basically really pulled me into wrestling as a kid. Like, I know he didn't show up in the E and the F back then, but the E until, you know, 1991. So I watched wrestling in the 80s, but it was more sporadic, I think. It was always one of those things where I would watch it when I was over at a friend's house, because my dad didn't want me watching wrestling as a kid. So it was one of those things I always had to look forward to watching when I was over at friend's houses. But the first time I saw The Undertaker, that's where I like got to the point where I was like, I have to like go seek out VHS tapes at Family Video and watch more matches and like that. Like, he's legit the guy that made me a wrestling fan.
Right? Renting the old Coliseum.
Man,
home videos,
I used to love renting the Coliseum home videos. Yeah, totally. So yes, I am definitely a mark for the Taker. Always have been.
John, where do you land?
I love Taker.
Yeah.
I didn't get on. You know, when I was a kid, I was a lot more indifferent towards him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was a kid, I really way bought into everything they were doing. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they brought him in as a bad guy, so I hated him. You know. And then even when they turned him, like, it was, I don't know, it's hard to describe. There was not any dislike, but there was indifference. If he was fighting guys that I hated, then I loved him.
Yeah.
And if he was fighting guys that I loved, then I hated him.
Yeah.
But when I got out of wrestling for a while and then came back and grew to really understand a lot more of the business from a lot more angles and through adult eyes, I've been a huge fan ever since. Because the guy, I mean, from in-ring to performance-wise to just straight work ethic, there's not a lot bad you can say about this dude.
For sure. So I did not like The Undertaker for a really long time. And I thought it'd be interesting. I wanted us to kind of talk about this because I thought it'd be great to get the different perspectives that we're coming to these matches from.
Absolutely.
So I did not like The Undertaker. I thought he was silly, you know? He really, I watched wrestling and I could kind of, it took me out. I didn't buy it. You know, what is this undead wizard with monks and a mortician that follows him around, and you know, the urn, but the urn keeps changing. I'm out. I can't buy into this.
Yeah.
I really over the last several years. As I became a wrestler and as I got deeper into wrestling, I really grew a deeper appreciation for what Undertaker represented, having been a, you know, career-long WWE guy, never faltered, never changed, never jumped ship.
Right.
You know, and delivering, you know, when he started, I bought in, I liked the American Badass.
Yeah.
When he switched and started riding the bike, you know, during the Attitude Era, I started to get into that a little more because, okay, you're a biker. I get it.
Yeah, that's like his real life thing.
Right. He was still the Undertaker.
He got to be himself. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So I bought in a little more. Still not one of my favorites. And it wasn't until probably around WrestleMania 2021 when I started to really appreciate, you know, and would hear about him being such a leader in the locker room and just kind of appreciate his veteran status, that I really took a look at the work he did in the ring and then grew to appreciate the work that he did in the ring. So I have a much more, you know, and it's probably sounds silly for me to say this because I've never actually shared a locker room with him. I have a lot more of a professional respect for the Undertaker than I ever have like a fan, been a fan of his work or a fan of his gimmick, any of that stuff.
Totally.
So he had to grow on you.
Yeah, but that's cool. And you know,
I just had to find the right perspective to appreciate him more than it grew on me, I would say.
So you mentioned like you were kind of put off by the silliness of his gimmick, but I think it's one of those things that you can really look at now, and I think that really says something for him as a worker, though.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he was saddled with one of those silly gimmicks of having like, oh, well, You're a mortician and you're a spooky mortician and you could do silly powers and you're like a zombie.
Well, and a Wild West zombie.
You're like from
mortician.
The Wild West, pal. It'll be genius, you know. So he got saddled with this silly gimmick.
Well, I think it's also, you know, when you hear people talk about it, like him and Vince were the only ones that were in for it too. A lot of guys like Hogan and Pat Patterson, you know, who have gone on record and been like, I thought this was the dumbest idea. I never thought.
Right.
I went to both of them and said, what are you thinking?
Uh-huh. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, it's proof that sometimes these silly ideas do work. Yeah. But it's also, it's on the guy who takes the gimmick on sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Because it was all on Mark Calloway to take that and run with it and make it work. And, you know, he went right through the era of the WWF where everybody's gimmicks were silly jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was real campy, you know, which is the era that everybody is well known now for being the era where WCW took over as the prominent company because they started being more realistic. So even when WWE made the switch to the Attitude Era, the Undertaker as this demonic, scary guy with weird powers still persevered and was able to modify his character to fit within the Attitude Era, but was still a wizard.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And like, it still worked. And I think that, and you know, and the thing is like, even though we all look at that and we know that it's silly and goofy that he has powers, we still love it.
Uh-huh.
And everybody always did.
Yeah.
Because even though in the Attitude Era, when all we want is realism, if the Undertaker shoots lightning at somebody, we're still marking out for that lightning. That's getting shot at somebody because that's cool.
Well, and,
so,
and it's the amazing part about the gimmick because, I mean, he came in at the beginning of that goofy period.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, survived right through it. And not only survived, thrived.
Yeah.
And could so easily have been like a throwaway. I mean, how easy would it be 20 years later to look back and be like, remember when they had like a clown and a garbage man and a crazy wizard mortician?
And a plumber,
But through whatever perfect storm of, you know, the right guy with the right take on the right character, it persevered through, and it's now undeniably one of the biggest things that the sport has ever known.
Yes.
And one of the most universally acclaimed things, you know?
Yep.
Because you find people who loved Hogan when they were kids, and you find people who always hated Hogan, and you find people who, you know, love Cena, and people who hate Cena, and like any of the big names that kind of come through, but you don't see a lot of Taker hate anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, at worst, you might get some people who are like, eh, I was never into the gimmick. But
right.
Like, but you don't there's no stringent of people who just hate The Undertaker.
Like everybody,
like a lot of those other big names.
Everybody respects him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Everybody respects The Undertaker.
And the more stories you hear about some of that backstage stuff, the more it just kind of permeates through.
Yes.
And I, you know, it was interesting you were talking about kind of the man who takes the gimmick too, is it makes you wonder, you know, would he have been this successful with any other gimmick? Like, was this, like, was he just going to be this successful no matter what? Or, I mean, I don't think for a second the gimmick would have been successful under a lot of people's, you know, brain.
I think it was the perfect storm of both things, honestly. Yeah. It was just one of those moments that you kind of hope for happens, right? Yeah. Where you not only, like, you've got the good worker and you've got the right gimmick that just, they work so well together that that's what worked for his career, you know?
And it is funny to look that every time you see an idea in wrestling, be it from 25 years ago or one of the newer ones, every time you see one where you go, man, that is so dumb. Who thought that was going to work? You can always look back to The Undertaker and go, well, maybe it's one in a million, but if you don't take any chances, you never get one.
You never get your Undertaker. Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do in this series of podcasts, because I believe we have this scheduled out to do six or seven episodes.
I think that's right.
To cover the 21-match undefeated streak leading up to this year's WrestleMania. So every episode's going to cover multiple matches. So we're going to do the first four WrestleMania matches from The Undertaker today. And we're going to kick things off at WrestleMania 7 against Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Jimmy Snuka. How do you guys want to start this? Do you want to... Because, like, me and Jaren both took notes.
Yeah, we took notes.
I didn't take any notes.
We know you didn't take any notes. I'm just impressed you watched the match.
Yeah, that's rough. Dan, I don't know if I like the new guy.
You don't know if you like the new guy? He's kind of mean sometimes. He's mean-spirited.
Yeah. I'm a little hard on John.
I'm going to be really impressed to see what kind of notes you guys garnered from a couple of these matches.
I know.
I think you're going to be real impressed.
Been,
All right. Well, I'll start then.
Okay, you start.
Okay, so Snuka. I'm going to kind of go down my list of notes as I'm going through this. So, yeah, Superfly, right? So he was definitely one of the first, like, names that The Undertaker fought in the first year, because when they first brought him in, he was brought in as a bad guy, like you mentioned. And his whole thing was, like, he basically just squashed a whole bunch of dudes because they were trying to build up his character as, like, this big, ferocious bad guy.
Yep.
So he got in this little feud with Superfly that led up to this WrestleMania match. So this match was straight up just a squash match, right?
For
sure. A WrestleMania squash match. Like, he just... Like, here's this guy you all know, Superfly Jimmy Snuka. And The Undertaker just destroyed him. Yeah. Just trounced him. But some of the notes I put on here. So, like, I noted, like, his entrance. First of all, first WrestleMania entrance he's ever done. Boy, he got to the ring so fast, didn't he?
Yeah.
Holy cow, that didn't take very long.
Nope, they didn't.
It's that old school, the old school Undertaker music, which was way more, like, organ heavy than it became. But they really focused on showing how scared all the kids were in the crowd. Like, that was their deal. Because they were really trying to push him as, like, a monster. So, like, they just kept showing all these kids, who I don't really know if they were scared. They looked a little more, like, confused or just, you know, whatever. But, like, the announcers were really putting it over as, these kids are terrified. There's, oh, my God, what is, he's a monster. You know, they were totally putting it over. So I thought that was pretty awesome. Pretty quick in the match, he hit that massive flying clothesline, which I've always been a mark for his flying clothesline. Because he gets some...
It looked good in this one, too.
It looked super good. Yep. Bumped Snuka with it real good. Snuka, I've noted that Snuka was really putting him over. Like, Snuka was selling huge for him.
Yep.
Like, just, And, of course, this was, like, Zombie Taker, so he was no-selling everything. Anything that he got hit with didn't faze him. He just kept walking. You know, he was just always moving forward. Always.
And it's an important distinction to make, because there's a lot of times where a no-sell in a wrestling match is a terrible thing. But, I mean, this was all character development and pushed forward with that. So, like... Again, it's another one of those comments you can make with a lot of people. It's like, well, the guy didn't even settle when he gets hit, and that's a negative thing. But for The Undertaker, that's what he was.
So totally.
Worked out really well.
The urn was huge, right? So that was the other thing that the announcers were kept putting over was the urn. They were making lots of comments about it. I know one of the ones that Bobby Heenan said I thought was hilarious, because he was like, did you notice that every time Bearer holds the urn away from him, the Taker does good. And if the Taker starts doing bad, he clutches it close to his heart so that the Taker starts doing better. Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was kind of amazing. Like Heenan was such a master, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that he said and came up with. I'm like, wait till we get to the next match. I got all these Heenan quotes. He was cracking me up.
Good.
That suplex into the ring was super pretty.
Yes, that was awesome.
Like, straight up and down, and, like, that was totally all snooker, too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like, but it was beautiful. Well, I mean, it was a good combination of both of them, but it was beautiful. And the only little bit of offense snooker got was where he finally started firing back, and he went for that springboard into the ring, and Taker caught him. And they fumbled.
Yeah.
Like, he caught him, and he dropped him. And he punched him once, and then picked him up and hit the tombstone. So obviously he was supposed to catch him and go right into the tombstone here. But it was fine. He covered for it. Tombstone 1-2-3, and that was it. Straight squash match.
Mm-hmm.
Straight, but it was impressive though.
Yeah.
Like this is honestly, when you look at it, I feel like this is a good first match for the streak, right? Like he came in powerful.
Yeah.
And
say what you will against an established guy.
Star
in wrestling.
Yep.
That was the goal of this match. Like, that was legit what they were doing. You can tell this was like a build up match for The Undertaker. And like we mentioned that he was already beating all the jobbers. So now they're like, this is where we send him in and we have him do the exact same thing to one of the established guys because that'll put him over huge. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the goal here.
Yep.
So. All right, I just had the whole match, so I don't know if
no,
you
that's
got
good.
Extra notes.
A couple of my things I thought were real cool. It was such a return to that time, and the ring sounded so different.
Uh-huh.
There was a different ambiance. They were miking it different back then.
Oh, man.
It was known for being a much stiffer ring, but you could just hear a difference in the way the ring sounded. That really stood out to me.
Yeah.
I
turned that on. I even, because like Christina watched all those matches with me.
Yep.
I just remember I was watching that last night and I was just like, I love watching wrestling from this era.
Mm.
And it's because of that feeling.
Yeah.
There's something about, like, the ambiance is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I really particularly noticed how even the crowd oohed. Like, at one point, Jimmy Snuka goes for a dive and The Undertaker moves and he just like lands on the top rope and then like falls.
Yeah.
And the crowd is like, oh.
I put plancha on top rope. Nope.
Yep.
As in, I would not want to take that
because
that looked awful.
Yeah. You know, but the crowd reacted to that, you know, and it made me think like the crowd would not.
Mm-mm.
You know, like the crowd would not react that way now because, you know, half the moves are designed to just dive out of the ring onto the floor anyway.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But back then, when you did some stuff like that, it meant something.
Yeah, totally.
And the crowd reacted for it.
Evolution or over-evolution or however, you know, back then, wrestlers, you know, the Vince McMahon version of a guy was, you know, the big, brawny, the muscle, the bodybuilder.
Right,
type, you know, and those
like snooker,
yeah, exactly. And there weren't high flyers, you know,
right.
And the few that came, even those guys, like what can? It's funny to me going back in my mind. If I go back to, you know, the high flyers of the day,
yeah,
I have the image of a high flyer today. Like I can put the face of, you know, even a Shawn Michaels to a degree, but like some of the like the Killer Bees or some of those old tag teams that I remember being the guys who would be a little bit more acrobatic.
Yeah.
And so I have their faces in my mind on these bodies of like a Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I go back and watch a match and I go, oh, that guy's big. He doesn't move that.
Yeah.
Like
back then a high flyer was being able to do a high drop kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
We got all that one covered?
I think so.
Yeah. All right, awesome.
I don't think there's a whole lot to say about
that
one.
There really isn't. I mean, it's a squash match, but it's a well-done squash match, I think.
Yeah.
I thought it was still super entertaining, and it was totally one of those moments where, like, even I can watch that today, and I was marking out for Undertaker.
Yeah.
I was like, this is pretty awesome. This is good stuff. All right, so that'll bring us to WrestleMania 8 against Jake the Snake Roberts, 1992.
Why don't you let me go first?
Okay, you go first. Yeah.
Right. Because my first note was actually before the match, and it's just a small thing. I thought it was hilarious that they let Jake the Snake do that promo. He clearly like ended that promo, and then Sean Mooney asked him another question. So
great work,
yeah,
Sean Mooney.
I was cracking it up because he was so, and Jake, I did like appreciate getting to see Jake kind of. And I don't know if this was necessarily in his prime. I don't know if Jake ever had a prime. I don't know how. But just the Jake promo.
Yeah, man.
I loved getting to see that.
Yeah,
and
man.
It was so great because he looked into the camera and he raised that eyebrow and he said just that perfect closing line like Jake does. And he held it and Sean Mooney's like, so, Jake, when you're... And I was just like, is this for real right now?
I'd leave. I'd
be like, just walk off.
I'm done.
Well, but Jake's a total pro, and he totally jumped right back on it and wrapped it up again. You know what I mean? But it was so clear.
Oh,
if you know Jake, it was so clear that like he was like, nailed it.
Yeah.
And then Sean Mooney's like, so, Jake, but expanding on that, how do you feel about...
expanding on that.
Yeah, I was like, come on, man.
Thanks,
come
bro.
Come on, Mooney. Yeah. So I like that. I was cracking up because somebody when the Undertaker was coming out. So getting to the actual match when the Undertaker was coming out, one of the announcers, it was Gorilla, because Gorilla goes, always that eerie smell of formaldehyde when the Undertaker comes to the ring, and automatically Heenan goes, I thought that was your cologne.
Will you stop? I wrote down the exact same quote. I rewound that and watched it again because I was laughing so hard and wanted to make sure. I just, will you stop? I wrote, will you stop, like several times in here. Because
awesome.
I love the Monsoon Heenan commentary is some of my favorite commentary.
Yeah.
I just,
their
I love those guys.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
They were good.
On the entrance, I noticed
at
the first gong, the crowd popped.
Oh, okay.
They were into, like, this time, like, just within a year.
Well, he was for sure face.
Yeah. But, like, I believe...
A good guy.
I believe, though, that, like, yes, a good guy. We have to do that, I guess. Baby face. I think he turned face because the crowd turned him face. Is that not what happened with
for
the
sure.
Taker?
Yeah.
Like, he was brought in as a bad guy, but he was so cool that everybody started cheering for him, and so they just went with it with him. Yeah. So, yeah, he was face. go ahead, sorry.
Okay, yep, nope. all right, so...
That Jack Tunney had banned the snake.
Oh,
from ringside.
Banned the snake.
Yeah.
Which did not make Jake very happy.
No, Jake was upset about it. So I did, I just noticed how, at this point, I noticed how good Taker was in the context of that time.
Mm-hmm.
He, every move he made was solid and with intent. You know what I mean? Like he just moved. And the way, man, he just carried himself so well, and he wrestled like that big man style. He's the definition of the big man style. You know, when you hear,
he really is.
I was
noticing the same thing, but was also just really impressed with watching him all the way back then, and just seeing like the same moves out of the guy, as you know, like he was doing the same stuff 20 years later, as crisp as he was here at this point. Like I was really impressed with that. Like I was watching it going, this is straight up a Taker match. Like Taker moves and like it's amazing.
His punches look great.
Yeah.
His, you know, and every movement had purpose, you know, and we normally associate that kind of, you hear guys talk about it. Oh, you know, Chris Benoit versus William Regal, you know, such a great match. Everything they did means something.
Yeah.
Everything Taker did meant something. You know, it wasn't wrestling holds necessarily, but everything he did meant something. He was so good in that context.
And I could say similar stuff about Jake the Snake, too.
Oh, man.
You want to talk about being a mark for somebody when I was a kid. And he's one of the guys, one of the few. I honestly can't tell you who I was rooting for when I was a kid when this match came on, because Jake was one of the few where even when he was a bad guy, was so good, you know, and I was recognizing it for different reasons, I think, when I was seven, but I was still totally into it. And I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know if this was necessarily his prime, but I feel like it was closer to it than I thought it was going into the match. Because watching him work that match, these are both two guys who are just excellent at their craft. And they both have that. I mean, they don't have a similar style because, you know, Undertaker's got that real big man style going on. And Jake just has the manipulation, you know, the intelligence angle that he kind of goes by. But they both have that slower speed to it.
Yep.
You know, and so the pacing of that, I thought, was perfectly done the whole way through. Like you said, like everything meant something.
Yeah.
And I would say from both sides of that angle there, I was really pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed watching this one.
Yeah.
I didn't think any of the early ones were going to be that great. Even the ones with people I like, I didn't remember being anything that particularly special. And this one wasn't terribly long or anything like that. I wouldn't put it on the level of the, you know.
Some that he gets to later.
You know, exactly, by any means. But as far as this early stretch goes, like, I really enjoyed watching this.
I did note that I felt like there was kind of a weird moment in the match because Taker was working as the face and Jake was definitely the heel. So Jake was working the heat in the middle of the match. But at some point I felt like the heat switched, or this was just Taker's comeback, but it was really weird and slow. Because like there was I broke down that there's a lot of choke holds happening. There was so much choking. Yeah. So much choking. And it felt like it lasted forever, to the point that the crowd got real quiet. And then it felt like all of a sudden Taker's just doing all this choking. And I'm like, well, now it feels like the heat switched.
Yeah.
Like, why is Taker working the heat when he was the baby? Because it was shortly after that out of nowhere he hit that huge flying clothesline. And that's what woke the crowd up. Like,
right.
He hit that big, beautiful flying clothesline, and the crowd popped up real quick, and all of a sudden they were way back into the match. But I don't know, is that me, or did that feel like, was that supposed to be his, like, comeback spot, or did they just do some sort of weird, like, I don't know.
I know what you mean.
The match felt strange.
I know what you mean. It didn't stand out to me quite the way it seems to have to you, but I definitely know what you mean, and I noticed, too, you know, the Taker, they never really changed. You know, Jake was clearly the bad guy.
Right, right.
And, you know, they were letting Taker be the good guy, and he was popular with the crowd. But he never really changed the way he wrestled.
Didn't change his style.
Right,
yeah,
you know, so it's kind of tough to say what they, if that was intentional, you know, if Taker was just out there and he was like, well, I better get some, chokes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Choke.
What are we doing, Jake? Who knows? Jake might have been high, you know, who knows?
Might have been.
You never know. He was.
Had a little bit too much apple juice before he came to the ring.
Yeah. Right after that huge flying clothesline, he immediately goes for the tombstone, and Jake just spins it around and nails him with the DDT.
Yes.
Which was Jake's finish, for those of you who aren't aware of that. I know the DDT is not really a finish these days, but
back then that ended dudes.
Yeah.
That ended them. So this was kind of a cool moment, though, because he hits him with that DDT, and he stalls for a little bit, and then Taker does that sit-up, and that crowd lost their crap, dude. Like, they marked out so hard that it was like you could kind of feel it. Like,
right.
Oh, my God, that was kind of amazing. Yeah.
That's another point where I kind of noticed a style difference between, you know, then and now. Not that those are few and far between by any means, but... because there's a couple of moments coming up through the rest of this match here, starting with this one, where what really caught me from a ring psychology aspect, though, was that Jake never really went for the pin there, you know?
Yeah, he never did.
Like, he just gave him time to do the sit-up thing.
Yeah.
And I was expecting... Well, by today's standards, you expect, you know, you hit that move, you go for the end.
Yeah.
Because today's false finishes
cover,
are always...
kick out at the three, looking for the this is awesome chant.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you
totally.
Know, and here it is, you know, in this, you know, back in, what, 90,
yeah.
91?
91.
92,
yes.
Yeah.
Just a totally different, you know, you hit that move and just the you didn't have to go for the pin. The assumption was just, it's over now. You know, like, that's it. You don't need the big kick out there. And the big kick out would have ruined the sit-up moment.
Yeah.
So it makes total sense that he didn't. It was just, it jarred me so hard seeing it happen because I'm so used to the way it goes today.
Yeah, totally. So Jake picks him up after that and, like, hits him with, like, a short-arm clothesline and picks him straight up and DDTs him a second time. And Taker sits up again.
Yeah.
And I wrote down a note. I thought only Hogan did stuff like that in this era. Because he just straight sat up after two of DDTs, which was – that's huge.
Yeah.
And, like, that's one of those things, again, where it's like you can tell that
Jake was putting them over.
That Jake was putting them over huge. The company was putting Taker over huge. Like, they wanted him to be a big deal because he just straight – he kicked out, essentially, of two of Jake's finishers back-to-back. So I love this part here because, like, I love the psychology here because Jake decides it's got to be that urn – And he goes out of the ring and starts going after Paul Bearer at right. this point, because he's like, I got to put a stop to this. But I love this part, because he walks up to Paul Bearer and straight jacks him in the face. But Paul Bearer doesn't even sell it. He just, yeah. like, he keeps holding on to the urn while they're fighting over it. And I'm like, you just got straight punched in the face by Jake. And you're still, I don't know, I laughed real hard at that.
Yeah.
But that's what Taker just followed him out and turned him around and hit him with a tombstone on the floor with his head miles away from
yeah.
the floor.
Yeah, there was a solid foot.
Bad,
yeah. solid foot
bad
away from the floor.
Bad camera angle yeah. And bad, yeah, just, but.
Keeping him safe.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But that was the go home, and that was the win for him. But yeah, I honestly, yes, like you, I enjoyed this match quite
a bit. It was a good match.
Like, I had some weird nitpicks, but overall, I very much enjoyed this match. I loved the psychology of it. It all goes back to the way they were putting over the urn like that too, and then yeah. and then like how that kind of played into the go home. Like that's just great Jake stuff there. I yeah. think honestly, yeah. So I really loved it. My last note on here is, why is Bear pulling Taker's hair? Did you guys notice that? Like when the match was over and they're in the ring, Paul Bear's like pulling the back of his hair and showing him the urn. And I'm like, why is this happening? like why isn't Taker just smacking him? Like, right. what is happening?
Huh, no,
I had never noticed that before.
I hadn't noticed that either.
I noticed that this time.
So the one thing I want to throw out there.
Okay.
That I noticed that's a little bit more of a just a comparative thing. So Taker, Undertaker, Mark Calloway is very young at this point.
Yeah.
Young in his career, young as a person.
Yep.
Okay. The announcers never call him this young stud. You know, nobody ever refers to it as his rookie year. They right. just treated him as a monster.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't see that. You know, like it's such a common thing now. You know, there's so much value put on. Oh, this young buck, he's got such a huge upside. You know, even I remember specifically, because it stood out to me every time somebody was talking about Bray Wyatt. And Bray Wyatt, you know, had this crazy hillbilly cult leader gimmick, and he came out with a big scraggly beard, and his guys had big scraggly beards. Yeah. But they would still...
He was the Duck Dynasty Undertaker.
Right, you know. But they would still call him like a young stud, and he's got such a big upside because he's so young, and he's had such a great rookie year. And I think that diminished from him. Like, to see how they use the Undertaker, and they're just like, oh my gosh, can you believe the Undertaker? Yeah. Who's going to fight the Undertaker? This monster, you know, oh, here comes the formaldehyde.
Yeah.
You know, but it was like, there was not... You know, had they come out and been like, oh, here comes the Undertaker, the formaldehyde, a great young stud, you know, having a hell of a rookie year here. Like, it changes that dynamic,
yeah,
you know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure.
So being all in on the gimmick the way the company was, I think makes a huge difference and is something that yep. is sometimes not carried over today.
Yeah, for sure. I will say, I think it's funny with, you know, looking back through a different set of eyes, because when I was a kid, he wasn't a young guy
mm-hmm.
new to the business. When I was, you know, when you're... I guess I would have been 11 or 12 when this happened.
Right.
But, you know, when you see guys like that when you're a kid, like 20 might as well be yeah. 40, might as well be 100.
yeah.
Yeah.
No
yeah
man, everybody's
yeah.
the same age. They're all adults.
Yeah.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I always had an assumption that he was an older guy, or like
right.
I just had the feeling that this was a more experienced and just generally aged person. And then I watched him work for 20 plus years, 30
yeah.
years almost, you know, and I see him today, and then I go back and I watch this match, and I'm like, look at little cute little
yeah.
yep.
with his
He's
curly
so
red hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
his curly
Taker.
Red full head of hair.
Yeah, yeah, totally. All right, before we move on to the next match,
yep.
Bobby Heenan says, death
yep.
never takes a holiday. Gorilla Monsoon says, will you stop? And I laughed real hard at that. And then a minute later, he says, well, he only takes a holiday at 1313 Mockingbird Lane with the Munsters. But then goes on to say, I think he's Lurch, which totally mixes up two. That's the Addams Family and the Munsters. So, but I laughed.
But yeah,
it was good
yeah.
stuff. All right, so that's going to bring us to 1993, which is WrestleMania 9.
I'll start this one.
Yep, Caesar's Palace WrestleMania for any of you out there.
Let me check my notes.
Yep, this would be
yeah.
Giant Gonzalez.
I just wrote down, hoy.
That's all you wrote down? Look how I started mine.
So I started, the first note I had was, man, Giant Gonzalez just has the best entrance music.
Was that real entrance music, or was that stuff they put in later?
I have no idea, it was the Cage's music.
It was just like a bass beat.
That's what it almost sounded like. A lot of times they've just overdubbed with generic music or whatever since then, so I didn't know if that was even
This was far too cheesy for them to have overdubbed it later, because it almost sounded like they wanted it to be the sound of his feet, you know, because it's just like boom, 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 boom. You know, it's so just terrible. And at a time when they were starting to have, I mean, Razor Ramon's entrance music was amazing. Diesel's entrance music was cool. The Undertaker's entrance music was cool. You know, this was around this time. Well, this is when we had Shawn Michaels sing his own music.
Yeah.
That's a whole different
Like podcast. there was good entrance music here, and then here comes Giant Gonzalez. Dong 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 dong. I was like, that's amazing.
Do you think anybody in the back would have went, somebody take time out of your day to make this guy entrance music?
Or
I mean, they do. He's a monster guy. He's gonna come in for a few angles and ultimately not work out.
Right.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
I wrote down that I actually do dig Undertaker's entrance with the chariot and the vulture.
So dumb.
Like the big vulture. No, I'm into it. And the smoke, all the crazy like green smoke that came out of the entryway. But you know what's really funny is like when they're recapping Undertaker's streak moments in those video packages, the only thing they ever show from this match is that entrance with the vulture. They don't show anything else. Yeah. So it's kind of iconic because of all those video packages that they've shown us over the years. Like, a lot of people probably know of that image of him with the vulture there.
Well, the thing I'll say is, like, they show him, when they show that recap, they show him with the vulture, and maybe you can kind of see it's a chariot, and if you know, then you remember, except they don't show that there's, like, two, like, half-naked Chippendales dancers dragging him to the ring, you know what I mean?
Right.
Dragging this big black chariot. You know, so like, maybe take that with a grain of salt. What I did note about that is that this is kind of the beginning of the Taker's theatrical entrances,
which
would become a staple of his WrestleMania appearances later on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, interesting that, man, bad way to start, guys. Like, who's like, let's get a couple of real buff.
Oh, wait, hold
real
on.
Buff dudes in toga.
Do you really have to question that? That was Vince.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Genius! Hey, pal, go find me a couple of half-naked guys to push this thing. Make sure they're buff. I noted, too, that they had this really awkward shot of that bird handler, like, grabbing the bird off the perch. And the bird freaks out. Yeah. And they're just, like, they're just showing the shot for some reason. And I was laughing real hard. So there goes the whole scary, ominous thing right out the window, because that bird just freaked right out.
And then the entertainment was done.
and that was it. Moving on. No. All right. Who wants to go on with you want to go?
Either way, I have a lot. So
I wrote two pages almost. Oh, my. What? So,
I remember.
Go on.
I remember this match. Had you asked me a week ago, I remember this match as Taker's worst WrestleMania match, maybe Taker's worst match.
Coughing right into the mic.
I have always uttered Giant Gonzalez as a joke. You know, I've never said his name with anything but I don't want to call it disdain, but
contempt.
That sounds a little too. But yeah, you know, I've never said his name with good intentions behind it. however, watching this match, I was impressed.
Yeah,
I was impressed. Ugh. This match is not good.
No, it's not. We got to get that out there.
Yeah,
not good.
So, well, first of all, let me just say, man, how big is Gonzalez?
Gonzalez
is so big.
So big. I haven't seen a dude bigger than him since then, I don't think.
For sure.
Right? Like, I was seriously...
Kali not bigger?
No, I don't think Kali is bigger than him. I was looking at Gonzalez and realizing that the top rope is seriously at this dude's pelvis.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't understand. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
He's like, I mean,
Taker was about at his... Taker's head was about at chest level.
Yeah.
And Taker was definitely taller than that on the great Kali. Right. Yeah. Okay, so let me just throw some things out there. First of all, as a wrestler myself, you can see Taker trying to structure this match and trying to build this match mm-hmm. around Khali's obvious limitations. Gonzalez's obvious limitations. He knew what he was working with, and he knew he was trying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He created some really cool visuals, and he was doing just the way he was moving in the match. He was doing such cool things. The one that really stands out to me is, you know, they kind of traded some punches, and I think he tried to choke Gonzalez. He's trying to choke Gonzalez, and Gonzalez was just like, nope, not having it. Choked him, backed him up to the ropes, and Taker did this really. It was so cool because he backed him into the corner and Taker moved up to the second rope, but he waited and let Khali continue to choke him. And then he stood up, and he stood up so definitively. And when he was on the second rope, he was taller than Khali, and it created this really cool moment. And they lived in this moment. Oh man, it was so, I was so like, ah, this is amazing. That's how a pro handles this. Because he stood up, and all of a sudden, oh, he's taller than Khali. And they took this Gonzalez. I don't know why I keep doing that, man.
Because
it's easier to say.
Yeah.
Gonzalez. So all of a sudden, he's taller than Gonzalez, and Gonzalez looks up at him, and he looks down at Gonzalez and there's just this moment of like, yeah, now what? And then he starts firing away on Gonzalez.
He choked him back. Right?
Did he choke him back? I thought he started punching him. Okay. So he starts choking him.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that was secondary to that moment. Yeah. That was secondary to that moment. And there were several things like that where Taker structured these moments where, you know, there was the moment of Taker, like, you know, oh, Gonzalez has got him. You know, Gonzalez is bigger. Gonzalez is stronger. And then all of a sudden, nope, I'm Taker.
Yep.
Have some. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I wrote down the same thing here because I really noticed that the crowd was eating that stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they started the match with the stare down with Gonzalez, like, looking way down at him.
Yeah.
And they did the thing where, like, he would club Taker, and Taker would do the zombie no sell.
Yep.
But then he clubbed Taker again, and this time Taker kind of stumbled, but he stepped right back up to him.
Right.
And then the third club, he actually knocked him down, but he jumped straight back up and got in his face again, and the crowd popped huge for that.
Yeah.
And then they went into that choke spot, and the crowd was way eating that up.
Yep.
So, like, their energy was kind of making me realize this was a great way to start this match, actually. That's because it was. And you're right. It's working within the limitations.
Yeah. It's how good Undertaker is because of that.
Yes.
And that'll bleed into the next match, too, that we talk about.
Oh,
but
yes.
The fact that, like, he's in this period where he's getting, you know, he is this larger-than-life character and a giant unto himself. And so they're running through this period of booking where they're like, okay, well, who's going to be believable fighting?
Yeah.
We just got to get the biggest guys we can,
right?
To the degree we can.
They don't feel like they can roll, or they don't want to because he's an attraction by himself.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily want to put him in the title picture. They don't want him in the main events fighting, Diesel and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and those guys just yet.
Yeah.
So they're creating these. Yeah. Super villains for The Undertaker to fight.
Exactly. Yes. And it's that monster feel. Like,
right.
You know, we have our monster that everybody loves. We have to find another monster for them to take. And then the obvious limitations that come with that.
Yep.
And I will say to I almost call him Khali. To Gonzalez's praise, I don't think... It's a guy who's just too big. Just too big, you know? Like, there's no way it's comfortable for him to move.
Yeah.
And so he's doing what he can, and he's at least trying to sell stuff, it seems, and all that, you know? Like, I mean, like, he looked like he was attempting to put effort into it.
Yes.
He's just held back by those limitations.
Yes.
But Taker always understands what he's a part of.
Yep.
And works it around whatever that is. And that's what has made him so versatile.
Yeah.
And this is when you really, really, really start to see that shining through. Because the first two matches were, you know, against established veterans. And they may have been different styles. You know, Snuka may not have been able to move like Snuka once could. But Snuka knew how to move around in a ring. And, you know, they had squash elements to them and everything like that. But now you're moving into a whole new era here. In these next two matches where he's just fighting big guys who, for, you know, for whatever reason, where they are in their life or their career, they ain't got it.
Yeah.
You know, but he can still make it look like a watchable
piece of entertainment.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. I don't want to gloss over what you said either, because Gonzalez, that was the other thing I noticed. And I just kind of remembered, you know, when I talk about, I remember this match as Taker's worst match, I remember Gonzalez as this big, lazy D-bag who sucked. Right? Gonzalez was trying, man. I really got a better appreciation watching Gonzalez being like, you know, he does suck, but he's trying. You know, he's not out there. He doesn't suck because he's lazy. He doesn't suck because he's not trying. He's just not very good. Yeah. You know, and he probably never had full training. They probably just found,
you're a big guy. And no, you got a contract now.
He didn't have to be that good to get to do what they wanted him to do.
Right.
Because his appearance is the attraction there. But there's a lot of guys who have taken that size and come in and just been lazy.
Yeah.
D-bags.
Yep.
And I didn't get that feeling from him either, which surprised me as well. Yep. Because I remembered him the same way. And then I watched that. I'm like, well, you know, I mean, he's given it what he's got. He just ain't got much.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I did write down,
okay,
yeah, I hate his selling so much.
Okay.
He's like a cartoon character, like way, way over the top with his selling. Like anytime.
This was 1992.
I know, and I know that, but like it was bad.
They were built on cartoons.
I know, but anytime Taker did anything, his selling was always, you know, and for the audio people, they can't understand that. Okay. But like it was either he was waving his arms real big, or he was doing those weird like jolts and like making the weird facial expressions, and I was just like, this is too much, bro. Tone it down.
Yeah.
This is too much.
So cartoony is the right way to describe that. Mm-hmm. And that is I find a hallmark of guys who got into wrestling not because they liked wrestling.
Oh, okay, okay. You know, they're trying to do what the way they see wrestling.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Not something they don't understand.
Yes.
Which is totally right, because as an indie worker,
right,
anytime I've ever been with somebody that's like, hey, show me some moves that you know, and I'm like, ugh, okay, fine. and then you just powerbomb them through a table. Yeah, and then I just whoop the, no. And so then I just like hook an armbar or something just to show them. The reaction is always like, just ooh, like that. Ooh, waving their arms all around. Like, that's the way they sell it. It's just like, ugh, stop. Yep. You're totally right. That's the perfect way to explain that. That's what this looks like.
Yes. Well, that may just be all he could get. Again, like, that we can't possibly understand the physical limitations of being that large. This is not a nuanced person.
Yeah.
This is not a guy who's going to sell you on a moment through a facial expression.
Yeah.
He only has larger than life, you know?
That's true.
At one point I wrote, it takes a year for Gonzalez to get into the ring. the whole spot on the outside, and then him getting back to the ring was like torture. I was like, oh my God.
Yep.
He is never going to get back in.
Right.
He should have never got out.
Yeah.
So on all everything we were just saying, I wanted to bring this up too, because like the moment that I kind of really noticed what we were just talking about was because, again, I was watching with Christina, which was really fun having her watch the old matches with me. She actually said, how come in those last two matches they were both basically Undertaker squashing the other guy, but in this match he's getting beat up so much? And I said, oh, well, that's because the story of the other two matches was that he was the monster,
mm-hmm,
and he was running through these guys. And in this match, Gonzalez is the monster, and he has to overcome.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then it's like it made that click in my head, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
that is the story of this match.
Right.
And it's not like I don't know, like it just made it like reaffirmed it for me. You know what I mean? And it totally fits right in with what we're saying.
It's one of those things you know, but until you actually acknowledge it, it doesn't hit you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, anything else? You got any notes there?
No, you can start. This was the first time we see The Undertaker walking the ropes.
I wrote that down too.
Yep.
First time seeing old school was what it eventually comes to be.
It's
now
called the old school now.
Is that the first time we saw it at WrestleMania?
Time we saw it at WrestleMania.
Yep.
Although I would not be surprised if it was the first time he did it, because who else would he have done that to?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
you
I
know,
know.
It was very much something that
I will
seemed
also say,
designed.
I didn't remember there being a DQ finish in any
of
these, so I didn't know what the go home was going to be, but I was a little surprised when that, it made sense and it worked and kept the streak that they didn't know they were in the middle of a line, so they got lucky on that one, I guess.
I just didn't really like the way it went down, though, because it was like Gonzalez was just working all that heat, choking him for like an hour, all that heat, you know? And then instead of Undertaker like really getting like a comeback, he just gets chloroformed and that's it. So that's... It's like what there was no. But right. Then, okay, so then
so
they
the
do...
finish of this match. So let's just at the end of this match, the giant Gonzalez, the 8-foot tall monster who has been hammering the undead zombie for the last 7 minutes, suddenly has his manager throw him a rag soaked in chloroform and uses that to knock the Undertaker out.
Which I don't understand so why weird. He needed it. Yeah, so it was weird. So it was structured no, so I, weird.
Oh, and then they DQ'd. There was the disqualification for the use of the chloroform rag.
They were running the angle with the urn, and I don't remember if it had been stolen.
No,
I think
no,
it
not
was stolen
here.
During this.
No, the stolen thing is the next match that we're going to talk about, right?
Oh, that was the next.
Yeah,
one. Yes, that's right. Yes, that's right. But they were. Harvey Whippleman was the one.
Harvey Whippleman was the
And so, like, I took it, and maybe I'm mixing the two up in my head, but I think it felt like it made sense to me at the time because they were seeing the same thing they've always seen, and that's the power of that urn shining through, and the Undertaker's coming back, and they saw that what was they were doing wasn't working anymore, and so I just took it more of as Harvey Whippleman going, okay, I've seen this. I know what's going to happen, so we're going straight to plan B before this whole thing falls apart on us,
Okay,
and then it goes sideways.
So the story you're telling makes sense, but I don't think they told that story well with this match, because I didn't feel that in this. To me, it felt like, well, he's just whooping the Undertaker's butt, and all of a sudden he's soaking his face with chloroform to win. I don't get it. You know, like
Gonzalez even looked scared when the Undertaker was getting those those power-ups and everything,
Next part of the match ends and Undertaker wins technically by disqualification. So that's one of those victories you don't really hear about very often when we're talking about the streak. But they spend a real long time getting him stretchered out by some dude with a sweet mullet. I wrote that down.
Well, that's that sweet mullet. He's still around today. He's still a ref today.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
Mullet
man.
Does he still have the mullet?
No.
So,
I could tell you his name if I didn't have to come up with it right now.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway.
They took a real long time with that. And
bring it to episode 2.
And then, so then Undertaker comes stumbling from the back, you know, like walking straight like a zombie back to the ring. And, so it's almost like even though the match had ended, this is his shine.
Right.
This is the actual shine part of the match now. Cause he comes running back in, he gets in the ring, he looks like he kicks Gonzalez straight in the junk with his toe. Which like I legit looks like he gets him right in the dinghy with his toe. Gives him a couple punches. And then he gives him that big clothesline and bumps him.
Yep.
And Gonzalez rolls out of the ring, and that's the end.
Yes.
Gonzalez leaves after that. So that's where Taker gets his shine
back. But, Gonzalez gets, ushered out by security.
Yeah, security. A bunch of deputies with big smiles on their faces are all kicking him out. You can tell they're not workers because they're all laughing about it. So I kind of realized at that point, okay, so this is the shine part of the match.
Right.
Like even though we had the DQ, that was still part of the heat.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and gets a shine at the end, so. It was, I don't know. I think I will agree with you that it's not as bad as I think it was in our memory.
Yeah.
But it is not a good match.
No.
No.
At no point, I wanted to put defense where defense was due and everything like that. Yeah, but it's a guy with extreme limitations and another guy working with a guy with extreme limitations. They both seem to understand where they were, but
that doesn't make it a good place.
Right.
You know?
Yep. I don't want to say this match is good. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think it's an interesting match to go back and watch and see what's happening, especially if you're a student of the game, of the game, if you're really into wrestling match and how to put that stuff together. Yeah. If you're just a casual fan and you're just don't skip this one. If you're a wrestler, this is a match to
there
go back and study.
That for sure. Else about showmanship. If you're a wrestler, especially on the indie circuit, you're going to run into a lot of situations where you're dealing with guys who don't know what they're doing.
Yes. You're totally right.
This would be a good one for that. And if you're just a fan, a student of the game beyond, just turning on Monday Night Raw to see who's doing what, then this is a match. This is an interesting match to go back and see a different way that this thing is done.
I agree. Real quick, too, I also wrote down, because you were talking about, working within his limits and knowing what he was working against. I noticed multiple times, and I wrote it down, where he was trying to guide him and was failing at it. There was one time where Taker literally grabs his shoulder and tries to turn him this way, and Gonzalez turns the opposite direction. And I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You can see it happen. Like, if you know what to look for, you can, you can see it happening.
Yep. And we have been there.
Yes, yeah. We have definitely been there.
Hey, let's do this. Come on, bro. Hold on. Yeah. Sell over here. No? Okay, you go. Do your own thing, man. I'll be over here waiting for the rest of that spot.
All right, so that's going to bring us to the last match we're going to talk about today, which is his fourth match, but it's actually, we skipped a year.
Yep.
So we are now in 1995, because I believe in 94 he had an injury. Yeah. Right, that kept him out of Mania.
Missed WrestleMania 10.
But that's where they did the whole doppelganger Undertaker gimmick was in 90. Like,
for him coming back.
For him coming back.
Right.
Right. So like that's why he's kind of feuding with DiBiase right now.
Yes.
Which leads into this match against King Kong Bundy in 1995.
Man.
Yes. Holy cow. I don't think I realized how bad this was going to be match, until I watched it again.
This match was bad.
I don't ever remember... I don't know if I saw this the first time through. I'm pretty sure I didn't.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those, like, I know I've looked at mm-hmm. the list of matches in the streak 100 times, but still when I'm like, oh, who are we watching? Who? King Kong Bundy.
King Kong Bundy.
Not woof, King Kong Bundy. Woof, 1994,
King
Kong Bundy. Well, right. Yeah. King Kong Bundy, who had main evented WrestleMania 2 against Hulk Hogan in the steel cage.
Yeah.
Who holds the fastest WrestleMania win over Special Delivery Jones. Yeah. That is not the King Kong Bundy that showed up to WrestleMania 11.
In a couple 11. Of Coliseum home videos that I rented many times.
Yeah.
You know, and really enjoyed. But yeah, but that's not who he is 10 years later.
Nope, definitely not. The first notes I want to point out here at the very beginning of this match. First time the lights went out for the entrance.
Very first thing I wrote too.
The music is better. It's the more improved version. Yeah, did you?
Yeah.
It's the more improved version of the Undertaker song without the heavy organs on it.
Okay.
I noticed that he's wearing the purple now.
Okay.
And Vince is on commentary and says he's undefeated at WrestleMania.
Does he? Okay. I didn't notice that. Okay.
So his fourth WrestleMania match, Vince notes on commentary that he's undefeated at Mania, which makes me wonder, were they planning to take him on that direction at this point now, or was it just something he was throwing out there?
Yeah, I would guess the latter.
Yeah.
But we'll pay more attention to the commentary.
Yeah,
we'll have to see. I would say I know we're years away from it being the streak.
Yes, yes.
I have no doubt that Vince had no vision of it going to that point.
Yeah.
But I also have no doubt that, you know, Vince doesn't notice things arbitrarily.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So he was probably starting to catch. Well, right. I mean, yeah.
There's a difference between being like, hey, we haven't jobbed this guy at WrestleMania yet, and 20 years from now,
Yeah, that's true. I also wrote down that Ted DiBiase has a comically oversized version of the urn, which looks totally absurd.
Yes, really.
Totally ridiculous. Absurd. Totally absurd. But it's because it's gimmicked with like a light in it.
Yeah, the flashlight.
Is that the one with the light was shining?
Yeah,
because I was thinking that was an earlier one. But
It's so stupid looking. And they're like, it's the urn, it's the urn. It's like, I just watched those other three matches. Yeah. That's not the urn.
No. Because you remember Paul Bearer, like, hugging that thing. And this one was like the side, you know, it's
like, what's in that urn? Right. Like, how many people are in there?
Oh, my God. Especially where the giant Gonzalez went.
It's like...
That's Giant Gonzalez is in there.
It's the basket they hit in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No joke, dude. It's ridiculous.
Oof.
Yeah. And what was up with them? So since we're talking about the urn, what was up with, like, in the first 5 minutes, like, he punches Bundy, rolls out of the ring, takes the urn back, then hands it, gives it to Paul Bearer.
So they're making a huge deal about DiBiase stealing that urn. And in the first 2 minutes of the match, he does his backflip over the top rope, walks over to DiBiase, takes it from him with no struggle, turns around, and hands it to Paul Bearer. And that was that. Paul's got the urn back.
And Paul Bearer takes the top off, and it starts shining the light around.
Shining the light all over the place. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, boy. This is a cartoon right here. This is silly. But it, then at that point, like, DiBiase leaves, and they focus on him leaving instead of the match.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden,
thank you.
and then Kama comes running out.
Kama Mustafa,
aka the Godfather, aka Papa Shango, whatever. He comes running out and just wallops Paul Bearer, steals the urn back from him, and then runs up the ramp with it. So then they interview him, and they do like a picture. Okay, so like the match is happening still, but they do a picture-in-picture, and they're way more focused on like the story of the urn.
Yeah.
And Kama's like, I'm going to melt it down and turn it into a gold chain, which he does.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember him doing that.
That must have been a huge chain.
Yeah, it was a big old gold chain he wore around his neck. It was ridiculous.
The big 90s gold rope.
Yeah. Nice. So that legit is 5 minutes of this match. All the shenanigans with the urn at the very beginning. It was so, so goofy. And because of all that, we're finally in the heat. And Bundy's working the heat.
Which is just a choke.
Oh, it's just that, yeah. Just
choke for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I wrote, all the excitement was with the urn. Long chokeholds again. Crowd is dead.
Yeah.
Like, Bundy's another guy who, like, I felt at moments in that match, like he was into it. Like, I mean, he was happy to be a part of something.
Yeah.
But, man.
Just happy to be getting that Mania paycheck.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, but he's so big.
Yeah.
And so old in comparison to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, he looks like it hurts him to move around.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, he's just got nothing. So again, it's another one of those where it's like, I want a dog on some of these opponents, but I don't.
Just go for it, bro. They're not going to hear this. They're not going
to
like.
I didn't want
King Kong Bundy's not going to call you up and be like,
I understand that, but
Jonathan, did you say?
Like, I went into both of these two matches.
Jay and King Kong Bundy strikes back.
Now Taker's going to fight this worthless guy. You know, at this point, but you know, King Kong Bundy had a good run. Like, he wasn't like a worthless guy totally. He was an attraction at a time when attractions were the thing. I'm not saying he was ever a great, like, technical wrestler by any means.
No, you're right.
But he had a run where he filled a role and he did it well.
Yeah.
And now, though, he's even beyond that. And it's one of those things, like I said, where, like, I almost just felt bad because I'm like, he's trying to put on a show. It just ain't happening.
Yeah. I'm sorry, John. I'm just picturing Jay and King Kong Bundy showing up at your door. Did you say on a podcast? Sorry. I just completely lost
anything
you were saying, man. I'm sorry. I mean, you're right. You know, yeah, King Kong Bundy was an attraction. He was trying. I get where you're going. Yeah. I felt like you were trying to explain to me, and really, I'm just picturing.
Trying to explain to them.
Jay and King Kong Bundy strike back. Okay,
good. So... I don't think there's really...
Sorry. No, there's nothing else to say.
Anything else to say because legit, like, the urn stuff ends. King Kong Bundy chokes Undertaker on the ground for an hour.
Yeah.
And then Undertaker stands up, body slams him, hits the ropes, hits him with a big flying clothesline, then pins him and gets the three count.
Yeah.
Did you think he was going to tombstone it?
It's just bad.
Well, the body slam was the big point there.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the clothesline he hit to hit the clothesline.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
Like for that pop
it was
moment.
Super
but
out of place.
The fact that he body slammed.
I don't know.
You know.
No, it was bad.
It was bad.
The finish was bad.
The finish was bad. The match was bad. I mean, the silly stuff with the urn was mildly entertaining because I was laughing at all the absurdity.
Yeah, entertaining in the best of ways, but entertaining.
This was easily the worst thing we watched out of all of these matches.
For sure.
Easily.
Yeah. Well, the one thing you could take away from watching WrestleMania 11 is that the Taker presentation starts to transcend his match.
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, the crowd is on their feet.
Yep.
When he's coming, you know, the lights go out. The crowd is in it for that. You know, he gets the whole ominous entrance, and he's the Taker, and they're going crazy for him.
Yep.
That match happens, and they don't. And then when he wins, and he's in the ring, you know, celebrating his win or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever Taker celebrates, I don't know if he celebrates. You know, when you're an undead wizard, do you celebrate pinning a big fat guy? I don't know, but whatever he does after a match, right?
Undead Old West Wizard Mortician.
I want a t-shirt that says that. That needs to be the Streak Easy t-shirt. It just says, Undead,
Old West Mortician Wizard.
Okay. Oh my God, that's happening.
So that's so but you know, the crowd is with him and they're celebrating and you know they're fully into that. So like we get to see, you know, you can see that he has transcended whatever bad match he might have.
Yeah, totally.
So, yep.
Oh my god.
Well, I just want to thank you guys for going through that fourth one so quickly there, because after we spent 20 minutes talking about the giant Gonzalez, I had no idea what we were going to say about this one.
Well, that was a lot of fun, and I hope you guys enjoyed our recap of those matches. What is next, Jaren, for the Streakeasy? What are the next matches?
The next matches are Diesel at WrestleMania 12.
Yep.
They are Sid at WrestleMania 13.
Oh, good.
And then they are Kane?
Kane, yep.
Kane at WrestleMania 14.
So that, we're going to do those three on the next one?
We're going to do those three on the next one.
Awesome, awesome. So go ahead and do your research.
Yep.
You guys have the network. Hop on there. Watch those matches so that you can know what we're talking about on the next episode of The Streak. Streakeasy.
The Streakeasy.
What a great play on words. Well done, Jaren.
Thank you.
That was your title.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
The Geekeasy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geekeasy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geekeasy Podcast.